This is Live Well Talk on Teaching Interventions to Empower and Strengthen Families, or TIES. I'm Dr. Dustin Arnold, Chief Medical Officer at Union Point Health, St. Luke's Hospital. Parents of young kids often deal with a range of behavioral problems in their children. At the TIES program, which is an acronym that we listed above, interventions can empower and strengthen families to help resolve behavioral issues. Join us today is Teresa Daubitz. She is the program coordinator of the TIES program and also an old friend from the Xavier days of her daughter's play basketball with my oldest. And so it's nice to see Teresa again. We were catching up prior to starting the podcast, and that's really, really, it's a small world, but I wouldn't want to paint it for however that goes. But tell us what the TIES program is. I mean, the acronym is kind of self-explanatory. Mm-hmm. It's hard to be a kid these days. Mm-hmm. It's hard to be a parent these days.
And COVID did us no favors, right?
No, and I don't think we've yet to see the damage.
We're COVID seeing it now. Did. We're calling them the COVID kids.
Really?
The kids who parents were on lockdown and they were at home all the time, 24/7. They were working at home. They've had babies, right, in 2019, and they can't take them to daycare. They're working from home and they were with them 24/7. And so that's become a real evident population that we're serving right now. But TIES is a positive parenting program, evidence-based, from a curriculum from Nashville, Tennessee. Back in 1969 is when it was started. So it's pretty darn old. The state of Nashville, or state of Tennessee, started this program originally to work with children who were diagnosed with autism. And what they found was a lot of the strategies worked with our everyday kiddos who didn't have a diagnosis of an intellectual disability or autism. It worked with our everyday families.
Give us an example of a strategy. I mean, my strategy for parenting is just let Tanya have her way with on everything.
Sure.
And just, you know, support her 110% and make sure that she's happy. And then the house seems to run really well.
There you go.
That's more being of a husband. but what are some of the strategies?
So some of the strategies the biggest one we use is giving specific positive attention. And that instead of saying, good job, Dustin, I'm going to say, good job, Dustin, you're sitting in your chair. I've given you a positive intervention where you're doing what I told you to do. If your job was to sit in the chair and you're sitting in the chair, great job, Dustin, for sitting in the chair. Because when we're specific with our expectations of our kids, they tend to react better.
Hmm. Interesting. I guess from a personal standpoint, how do I get my teenagers to take me serious?
Well, that should have started a long time ago.
All right, so it's maybe too late. But, you know, I think a lot of us, I know there are parenting handbooks.
Yep.
But there really is no handbook.
There is no. You know? And not everything works 100% for each family.
And some of us, me including myself in this list, we're just blessed with like great parents. And a lot of times I've imitated what they did or how they handled things.
Right.
And I think they were imitating their parents who were, in my opinion, great parents and so forth. So sometimes you get lucky.
Yeah.
But sometimes if you have dysfunction, you need a game plan. Is that kind of what this is directed towards?
A little bit. Yeah. Or it's just people who are not really ready. Not really sure. Because again, like you said, there's no handbook.
Right.
And they're just at a loss at what to do. And I think social media creates this environment of what parenting looks like. And it may not really be accurate.
Yeah.
We have a lot of parents who want to be their kids' as friends. And when you do that, you really are not giving this parental thing a chance, right? Because children need structure. Children need guidance. They need to know what to do. We often say, don't run, don't do this, don't do that. But then we're not telling them what to do. We're not giving them those expectations. And that's really the crux of what we do at TIES. We're going to teach parents how to give a clear instruction. Sometimes parents talk and talk and talk. Just give a one sentence instruction. And we're talking about, we serve kids 18 months to 5, right? So their developmental concepts aren't there. They're not going to get a 5-stage instruction. We're just going to give one simple sentence and teach parents how to do that well.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that I said it last night, that social media came. I go, you know, Twitter is not a real place. You can't go to Twitter. Mm-hmm. You can't live at Twitter. Mm-hmm. You can't, you know, and people that post on there are not real people either. Mm-hmm. A majority of the time, you know, it's some sort of Oscar Wilde, give a man a mask and he'll tell the truth sort of thing, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, you know, and social media is bad.
We're seeing it. And I mean, we have children. I share an office with children's specialty services out there, and then our child life day treatment program. They're seeing that more and more, what social media has done to our poor kiddos.
I can't remember. He was a younger superintendent of schools, a man a couple years ago.
Buck.
He was talking about some of the issues, and he made a great point that I even reflect on my own life as mm-hmm. a junior high school, where you got into someone maybe on the school bus ride home, and you were just thought about it all night. But by the time you got up in the next morning, you sat next to the same person. It wasn't like the day before never mm-hmm. occurred, because he had that cooling off period.
Right.
And he was making the point that cooling off period does occur because whatever dispute you have with your buddy or mm-hmm. the bully or whatever continues on over the night to the point that it escalates to, you know, whether it's violence or mm-hmm. ongoing conflict. And that's so true. You know, I think social media does that. Mm-hmm. And additionally, it gives this fantasy Facebook of your Facebook life. I mean, mm-hmm. Nobody's honest on there. No. That or it's honesty or reality to a degree. It's hyperbole. And now mm-hmm. it's not even, you know, believable sort of stuff, I guess. So do you have any metrics? This has been going on since 1969.
Yep. So we're celebrating our 15th anniversary here at Unity Point.
And do we have any metrics to say, here's the success that we've seen?
We actually do. We just completed a survey, and 100% of our graduates feel that their parenting skills were improved, and that only 1%, and actually it was 1 out of the 100, 1% of those children in review of 10 years later after graduating from the program had an office referral. That's huge.
Yeah, that is big. That's a great
success. Huge. We also do statistics with or surveys with our parents on admission and on discharge. And on average, 40% of those parents reduce their stress level. So if we look at it from the perspective of child abuse, if I'm reducing the stress level of a parent by 40%, I'm also reducing the risk of child abuse or child endangerment in that home. And that's huge.
Well, and when it comes to children, I think you can go back and say that if you're only successful 1% of the time, that was worth every moment of your effort, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because it's all about the children. Mm-hmm. And we save one.
Yeah.
And we create a successful environment where a child can thrive. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I think parenting gets overcomplicated. Mm-hmm. Let me say this out loud and see what you think. Being a parent's complex, but it's not complicated.
Correct.
Right? There's a lot of moving parts. Mm-hmm. It's complex. Mm-hmm. It's emotions, teenage daughters, which we'll do another podcast on.
Maybe that's right. Teresa,
you could come back for that one.
Okay.
But it's pretty simple. It's just love them and support them. Mm-hmm. You can't be their friend. But you can be friendly towards them.
Absolutely.
But you're their parent. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's sometimes as simple as just tell them to go to bed when they should.
Yep.
Make sure they have a good breakfast in them before they mm-hmm. go to school, because you learn better that way. Just simple things like that. Yep. Get your homework done before you play. Mm-hmm. Those aren't fun things to do. Mm-hmm. Certainly doing the homework with them sucks because, you know, nobody does math like.
No. Not the way we did it.
Right, exactly. The right way. Not the way we did it. It's the right way. They do it the wrong way now. But it is a bonding experience, though, too.
It is.
You really get to see, I can say this for sure with our youngest daughter, that you really get to see how, like, they problem solve. Mm-hmm. And it's like, wow, that's good critical thinking skills. And so as part of this, just giving them that skill, that critical thinking skill to kind of not take the easy way out on some of these
complexities
we talk
about? Right. So a lot of people, when I give them the curriculum and we sit down and we meet with them, a case manager meets with them, and we meet 2 hours a day for 2 days a week. And so when our case manager meets with them, we're talking to them about different strategies, and they're looking at me going, okay, it's that simple? And I'm like, yeah, you're making it way harder than it really needs to be. And once they start implementing those strategies, they recognize that it isn't that hard. So we may, like you had mentioned about eating, a lot of parents complain that their kiddos can't eat a meal without the TV on, or they get up and leave the table in the middle of the meal. Well, we practice that at Ties. We give them a snack and we give them the instruction, if you leave the table, snack goes away. People think their children will starve to death if they don't have their snack. So the minute we take that snack away, the kid's like, did you just take my snack away? You know, and if we follow through and keep that snack away, because we gave you the instruction, right?
Right.
We gave that child the instruction. And so the parents are practicing that at home. So once they figure out that that food is gone because I've left the table, they're going to stick around if they're hungry. And it's okay. They're not going to starve if they don't have that meal.
Right.
So it's changing their mindset again, and that about being a friend. I don't want to be mean. You're not being mean. You're being their parent.
Well, and don't you think there's also kind of a guilt that, okay, if I'm too strict, then that will push them away from me, and will it push them into substance abuse or running with the wrong crowd?
Yep.
Because honestly, I've said this on it to multiple people, and multiple people I grew up with. I just talking to a gentleman that grew up with just a couple weeks ago in the hospital. He was working for a vendor, and we talked, and I asked him how he was doing, you know. And I said, you know, we were lucky. We were all pretty good kids because we were so unsupervised. You know, I mean, I really sometimes I reflect.
But did you have an expectation?
Yeah, expectation to be good, and we were good kids, but we were unsupervised. I mean, if we'd had one bad kid that was a leader, we'd all be in prison, you know. You know what I mean? I mean,
but you left the house with an expectation from your parents that said, you screw up, you're in trouble.
And I think all those unsupervised kids in my neighborhood did.
That's right.
Because we all had, thankfully, we all had two-parent families,
right?
And our parents had,
and that's another podcast,
right? Absolutely. You know, that's harder and harder.
It is,
or more common, I should say, than what we'd like to see it. But you know what I mean? So sometimes I think I've had those feelings, and I'm sure you have too with multiple children, that, you know, if you're too strict, then is that going to push them away? And you don't want that to happen either, because it's hard to be a kid.
It is hard.
You know?
It's a bigger challenge. Yeah.
You talked about the curriculum. How long does the program last? You gave 5 months to 5 years, or what did you say?
18? No. our kiddos start from ages 18 to 5 years old is our demographic for children.
Right, got it.
So those are the ages that we serve. And our program, it's based on a curriculum, so there's no shortcuts. So our active phase is anywhere between 9 weeks to 10 weeks. And then we don't bill insurance. We're 100% free. And so then what we ask is, we've trained you, so I need you to help me train the next set of parents. We're a very small department here at Unity Point. And so most of my staff are parent volunteers doing their payback phase. So they've gone through active treatment. They are then mentoring the other parents coming in and helping them in the classroom. And so they are the people who go, I know where you're at. I've been there too.
Oh,
it's all going to be better.
That is a human experience.
Absolutely.
Of just not being... thinking you're alone. I see it with patient care a lot. I see it just in other conversations. You see it in the literature that you might read or movies you might watch, that people have this thought at one point that they're the only one with this problem.
Yeah.
They're the only one that feels this way.
And the tears that you get of, I'm so embarrassed, you know, because I have parents from all backgrounds, right? I've got teachers. I have people with master's degrees. I've got people who are unemployed. They come from everywhere. But they're embarrassed because they can't parent their kid.
Right.
And don't be. This is, it's not easy. It's really hard.
No. Tanya and I were driving to a basketball game last night. But then we also said, you know, no talent of our own, but we just, a lot of it's luck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really is. And
it is.
And so I think you do need programs like yours to help people be lucky. if that sounds, because we're all going to be unlucky. Mm-hmm. We need a skill set for when we need that luck in our life. Yeah. And I think that's what you're doing. How does someone get enrolled in this? I mean,
just call me.
Just call
me. So a lot of times, yeah, it's on the website and people can just give us a call. We don't need any referrals. And so sometimes we'll get referrals from their pediatrician. We'll get them from the school. We'll get them for the daycare. A lot of times daycares will see the kiddo is struggling and say to the parents, hey, why don't you reach out to Ties? They can help you with some parenting stuff and go from there. So it's a direct referral. You just need to pick up the phone and give us a call.
And as you said earlier, it is no cost.
No cost, free. We're 100% grant funded through Early Childhood Iowa. And so we've been fortunate enough to pull down some grant funds from the state that we can help our community. And so we're Linn County wide. Anybody can come. You live in Springville, come on over. But yeah, it's great.
But those people live in Benton. No way.
Actually, we've served people who are in Benton County.
Okay.
What we do is we have to...
Because this podcast is worldwide.
Yeah, right? Worldwide. Yeah.
I know all the other, 98 counties in Iowa are listening. So,
yeah.
So they could call and at least get some resources and some direction.
Absolutely, yes. Good. We can certainly help them get
that. And what is that number?
319-558-4861.
319-558-4861.
Yep.
The Ties program.
The Ties program. It's good stuff.
It does sound like good stuff.
It is. It's a huge investment. You know, you and I have traveled with our kids to basketballs and soccers and to show choir stuff. And the amount of time and commitment we put into that, if we can take a look at it and put this little time and effort in down here, later on it's going to pay off. We're going to see that.
It sounds silly. It takes a village, but it does.
It does.
It takes a community. It really does.
Yeah.
One last question that all guests we either get before, at the start of the podcast or at the end. Why? Okay. Why are you a social worker? How did you become a social worker?
You know, I've always liked working with families, and you can appreciate this. I wanted to be a doctor. I flunked microbiology twice, and my dad said, you know what? You need to find something else to do. So I said, okay. So I became a rec therapist, then a social worker. I loved working with families. So I have 35 years in adult mental health experience, and which is a passion of mine, helping those with chronically mentally ill. And then just some life events happened, and I thought to myself, I think I need something different. You know, that compassion fatigue is real. Stress is real. And so creating that change was important for me. And we've talked, I have four kids. You know, I have four college graduates. And so I must have done something.
All off the payroll?
All off the payroll. So I did something kind of right. And so I thought, wow, how can I implement some of my skills and help families? And this seemed like a great fit. So when the opportunity came up, I jumped at it and said, I love it.
I think it's the common theme in patients. I mean, excuse me, common theme in people that do your type of work is they just love to solve problems and to help.
Yeah.
You know, social workers make great neighbors because they're always the first person to say, hey, I can help you do that.
Right.
I got a pickup truck. I'll help you move.
Yeah.
That, you know, so it's good to have social workers. Social workers, plumbers, and auto mechanics are the people you want to live next to. Right?
That's right. That's
you could Google whatever medical. Go to WebMD, figure out what's wrong with you.
But
you cannot Google.
We tell people not to do that.
Oh, okay. All right. But, you know, you really can't Google how to fix your car.
Yeah.
So you auto mechanics or plumbers. So. Well, thank you for joining me. It was
good to talk again.
Good to get caught up about the kids.
And thank you.
Thank you for joining me again. For our listeners, this is St. Luke's Ties program, which stands for Teaching Interventions to Empower and Strengthen Families. Once again, this was Teresa Dobbitz, St. Luke's Ties program coordinator. For more information, visit unionpoint.org/ties, T-I-E-S. Thank you for listening to Live Well, Talk On. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. And if you want to spread the word, please give us a 5-star review and tell your family, friends, neighbors, strangers about our podcast. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, or wherever you get your podcast. Until next time, be well.